To Catch a Dream, written by Mary Wood, read by Annie Aldington. Part 1. Ultimate Betrayal, 1873 to 1876. Chapter 1. Bridie. County Cavan in the north of Ireland, 1873. Confusing conflicts.
Will you shut your mouth, woman? Haven't I enough on me plate without your constant whining?
Fear tickled the muscles in Bridie's stomach and tightened her throat. The eruption of her pappy's anger grated in the already tense atmosphere that coated the walls of their home.
"'Tis as I'm worried to the heart of me, Michael."
"Wish, woman. You'd drive a man insane, you would. Would you have it any different? Would you have that traitor free to do further damage? It has to be done. Sure, the cause depends on it. We must rid ourselves of those who would betray us."
Torn between staying to see that her mammy was all right and delivering the loaf she'd been told to, Bridie hesitated. But she knew her disobedience would only add to her pappy's agitation. The argument taking place in her parents' bedroom quietened. Her prayers begging for her mammy not to keep protesting at whatever pappy referred to seemed to have been answered, though she knew that if her pappy came out and found her there, listening, it could all start again. She couldn't risk that.
"Is that yourself, Bridie?"
"'Tis, Mrs. Finney. Mammy sent me with some bread for you."
"Aye, that's good. Your mammy is kindness itself. Is she keeping better?"
"She is. She's been grand these last weeks."
It wasn't easy to keep the tremor from her voice, but Mrs. Finney didn't seem to notice it.
"Come away in then, my wee lass, and let me get a proper sight of you."
Disturbed from his peaceful grazing, the piebald tethered nearby snorted. His nostrils flared. His cream silky mane fanned out with an annoyed movement of his head.
"Wish now, Ginger. 'Tis only me."
One more defiant huff and he settled down. Catching up the hem of her muddied, rust-coloured skirt, Bridie climbed onto the ladder. The familiar creak of the Vardo steps enhanced the excitement in her. She loved it when the travellers arrived. They visited her pappy's farm twice a year, once in springtime to help with the planting, and as now in the autumn, to lift the potato crop and turn the soil ready for winter. Going into the semi-darkness of the interior blurred her vision. It took a moment to adjust after the bright sunshine outside. Once she could focus, she saw Mrs. Finney lying on the bed at the back of the caravan, her swollen leg supported by a block with a soft fleece thrown over it. The old lady peered at her and said,
"You've grown. Is it 14 you are now?"
"Yes, and I'm not for having to go to school any longer. I left just after your last visit, at Easter time."
"And is it you have to work at the castle like the rest of the girls around here?"
"No. The priest tried to get me a place in service, but Pappy would have none of it. He says there's enough for me to do around here."
"Aye. Michael is always looking for the cheap labour, so he is. But you should be finding yourself a fella by now and settling down. All my girls did by your age. They've all caravans of their own and are off around the country. Some have even crossed the water."
"You know that isn't our way, Mrs. Finney."
"Aye, we have our differences. Put the loaf on the shelf next to the tea chest, my wee one, but wrap it first. Use one of those cloths from the pile in the corner."
The aroma of fresh-baked bread, as Bridie wrapped it in the crisp white muslin, mingled with the smells of the small wood-burning stove, the canvas of the arched roof and the sheepskin rugs. This, and the clinking of the jars containing jams and preserves as she slid them along the shelf to make room, settled a feeling of homeliness in her and calmed her tangled nerves. The brass key of the small wooden tea chest, a legacy from the days when it had lived in a much grander place, swayed back and forth, as if to remind her that it had once locked out anyone not allowed to touch its contents. Now it no longer